You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Round one, fight!
Can't we do our own secret shows?
All our shows are secret shows.
We have the tools, we have talent.
We have to use so many cuss words.
Let's go!
Ooh, yeah!
Redacted. It's like all the papers they found in Donald Trump's bathroom. It's all redacted. Do you believe that whole situation? 37, and I immediately thought of Clerks. It was like 37 indictments. I was like, 37 in a row? Try not to leak any state secrets on your way to the parking lot.
What an idiot.
Yeah, I know. I was watching this YouTube video. It's a guy who usually, like, he's a lawyer, and what he does is he talks about, like, lawyering in movies and TV shows and, like, how accurate it is or whatever.
What they get right.
Yeah, and it's a really cool YouTube channel, but every once in a while, he'll kind of talk about current events and what's going on and, like, the legality of what's coming up and kind of explaining it in layman's terms, like, okay, this is what's going on. And, like, the first time that Trump was indicted, he was like, this isn't really a big deal. This is the kind of thing, like, you see a lot. It's this kind of case, and, you know,
it's an accounting thing.
Yeah, he's like, if anybody's looking to him to get in, like, big trouble, you're probably going to be holding your breath for a while.
He'll get fined, but he's not going to do jail time for that.
Right. So then this one came down, like, 10 hours ago, he put down this video. He's like, okay, so how bad is it for Trump? And he, like, puts in huge letters, real bad. This is real bad. And
yeah, they're talking about, like, what is he, 77, 78 or whatever? Like, this motherfucker could die in prison, which, you know, most people are okay with, or at least I am.
I'm okay with it.
Listeners to this podcast probably as well. But yeah, that would be ideal, honestly.
It's so funny because in my day job, I work with, like, radio talent that try to, like, stay in the middle of the line so they're not alienating any listeners. And I'm
you don't want to be Bud Light.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just like, no, fuck him. Fuck this guy. I'm totally okay with him dying in prison. You know, let him pull a Unabomber.
Yeah. There you go. Him and old Ted Kaczynski.
So, I guess kind of getting ahead of myself, but yeah, that's what's going on in the world today. So you know what? Before we go any further, let me just introduce. This is the Low Res High Def podcast on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
I'm Joel,
and this is where we kind of come to talk about everything. I try to fall into my old cadence where I'm like, well, we come to talk about movies. Sometimes we talk about politics and the politics of dancing. That's a deep cut. It's an 80s cut if you guys
get it.
Are paying attention.
Hey, if you're listening to this show, you'll appreciate the 80s references.
That's right. You can follow us online at Low Res High Def. That's also lowreshighdef.com. We kind of talk about everything. And the name of the game, we're just a couple of guys that grew up in the low res era of, like, Atari and original Nintendo gaming, and we've kind of kept that. That's been part of our passion, you know, the B movies of the 80s and those things that kind of shaped who we are now. And even Spielberg back in the day, you know, using his the practicals and all the low res stuff he did that looked awesome then. But it's kind of informed what we look for now, and that's the high def part. So I guess the best physical representation of who we are is a Nintendo Mini, because we get to play those old games, but we can get it on an HD screen.
Yeah, there you go. Although if you look at my waist size in the years recently, you wouldn't think it's so mini.
Your waist size? What are you talking? You look fantastic. Also, by the way, someone got a haircut, and you look really good.
Like, I did get a haircut.
The listener can't see this, but you got a haircut, and it looks awesome, man.
It's great podcasting. Well, thanks. Thank you. I appreciate that. I finally figured out how to direct the woman here who cuts my hair, because she always kind of goes a little too short.
Do you direct like you direct film? Like, do you do, like, the fake screen, like, thing with your hands?
Yeah. Here's what my character is.
I want to be Paul Walker from Fast and Furious. Not the first one.
There you go.
The third one.
With a little bit of Matthew Patel thrown in.
Have you watched any of those besides the ones we did for the podcast? Have you watched any of the Fast and Furious movies?
No, I have not. No, it's not really for me. I can tell I'm not really into fast cars. And honestly, I am so backlogged. Like, I feel like a bad geek, actually. I am proclaiming to be a fan of, like, film and video games and all things geekdom, and I am way behind on my movies and my video games.
Well, here we go.
So I have no time for the Fast and the Furious.
This is the nerd confession.
That's right. Yes. Father, it has been 3 months since my last film in a theater.
What was it? Was it Mario?
Yeah, actually, I think it was. Yeah.
Was that the last one that just came out on, you know,
I know exactly,
video
on demand
this past week?
Which I had a lot of grand aspirations. Okay, so here, I got to apologize both to the listener, Joe, and you personally, because here we are. We started up this brand new podcast in February or March of this year. We're back. We're back on the wagon again. Here we go. Weekly podcast. You know, for all of you guys who missed us from our previous two podcasts, we get 7 episodes in, and then I got to take a month off because life got in the way.
It
was all on me. No, but I've got a good excuse. So I had a video shoot the last week, or, you know, mid-May. And so that got in the way of recording that week. And then I immediately afterwards went on what was supposed to be a 10-day vacation from, you know, the last week of May all the way up until Memorial Day weekend, which is also Jenna's birthday. Jenna's birthday was on Memorial Day this year. And so we took a little trip, went down to Savannah, Georgia, took a road trip, ended up in Jacksonville, Florida, and we're having a great time enjoying the sights and sounds until she got a really bad infection the day we got into Jacksonville.
Oh, no.
And was in some of the worst pain in her life. And basically, the day we were meant to check out of the hotel to come home on her birthday was the first day she felt better in like 3 to 4 days.
Oh,
so
no.
That really sucks. So we made the call. We were still in Jacksonville. And, you know, in this age of COVID and people working remotely, she was like, you know what? I got a really light week. I had brought my laptop and all my projects with me. And so we made the call. We like stayed in Jacksonville for an extra week.
Good.
I worked out of a hotel room. She had some friends there because she used to live in Jacksonville. So I was working out of the hotel room while she was visiting some friends. We were taking some time in the evening to kind of make up for lost time there since she'd had such a bad go of it. So that what was supposed to be a 10-day vacation and a 2-week hiatus for us turned into a 3-week. And then the week I got back, I had another shoot that I had to fly out for. So this has all been my fault, listener and Joe. So apologies.
It's okay.
And thanks for, well, yeah, it's fate.
You must now do 5 Our Fathers and... it's Lord's Prayer. They call it the Lord's Prayer.
The Lord's Prayer.
You don't call
right.
it Our Fathers. And some Hail Marys.
Some Hail Marys.
Throw 10 Hail Mary passes. And
Oh, man.
No, it's fine, dude. You know, it's okay because I'll tell you, man, there are times where I'm so stoked and so fired up to get on the mic and talk with you about some stuff. Mm-hmm. And then by the time 9 p.m., 10 p.m. your time rolls around, I'm like, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I'm so tired.
Do we have to do this tonight?
And so when you're like, hey man, can't do it this week, I'm gonna be honest. Like there are parts when I'm like fist bumping. I'm like, yes. I'm gonna go to bed now.
Really get me excited for this episode. Thanks, Joe.
No, this is awesome though. I'm excited for it. But before we get into the topic of the day, I do want to talk about, you know, since we are a month behind, what is your obsession? What is it that you're focused on right now that you're digging? I know you said that you're behind on a bunch of nerdy stuff. I am as well. And there is no better piece of evidence of this than our text thread for the podcast where friend of show Jay is just like live tweeting his experience with Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. And like, there's a part of me that's like, I'm half like skimming it, but I don't want to spoil the game. So I'm kind of only half paying attention to what he's writing. And if he like, if he sends us pictures of anything, I kind of ignore it. And if I feel like he's starting to get into details about some stuff, I kind of ignore it or I try to change the topic just a little bit. Like, here's the thing. Like, I'm excited for him. But at the same time, I'm like, yo, dude, don't need to know all this. Like, you know, I know with Elden Ring, I was giving you guys updates on Elden Ring. But that's because I know 200% confidence that Joel, you will never play Elden Ring. So
absolutely
I'm like,
not.
Okay, I'm in a safe space here. And Jay, I'm about 75% sure he's not going to play through it. So I felt pretty safe about it.
You guys are pretty good curators, I would say, of what's spoilery and what isn't. And I think Jay's been doing a pretty good job. I think you're probably safe.
Okay.
He does send some screenshots of maps, but the maps are mostly empty. So it really tells you nothing.
Gotcha.
Like he's using them to say like, here, you know, because I asked him today, I was like, hey, how far are you in? You've been playing for 180 hours. And he's like, and then he replies with a half filled in map just to give you an idea of how expansive that game is.
Well,
so he's nowhere near the end.
I'm excited about it. But
as I
also have not started that game. I don't know if it's because I'm intimidated to start it or I know that once I start it, there's now going to be like an expiration date. Like it will eventually be done. I'm so excited for this game to the point where like, I don't want it to end. And the best way to keep it from ending is to not start it, if that makes any sense. So I keep delaying. I'm like,
you're like the computer from War Games.
Yes.
The only way to win is to not to play.
Yeah. Like instead, dude, I've been playing through like, and I know we talked about this on probably a previous podcast, that I've been playing the Mario and Luigi franchise on the 3DS. Like I bought all those games, mm-hmm. and every time I finish one, I'm like, okay.
How many are there?
There's 4.
Okay.
There are 7 releases because they re-released like 2 of them, and then they like added on to a couple of them.
That didn't count.
But yeah, I think in the official canon, there's like 4 or 5, and they're all fantastic. They're great games. This last one, I played Bowser's Inside Story. Now, the main story of that one is really good, and I guess we could say that this is my obsession.
Your
still.
Your obsession, sure.
Is Mario and Luigi, this franchise. But like Bowser's Inside Story is really good. But what they did with 2 of the releases, they re-released the first one, mm-hmm. Superstar Saga, and they added on like this secondary game called Bowser's Minions, which is kind of a tower defense game. But it's got there's a little bit of depth to it, which is pretty fun and a fun story. And it was kind of delightful. Well, they did something like that with Bowser's Inside Story, where they did Bowser Jr.'s Journey. And Bowser Jr.'s Journey was kind of, I don't know, bloated, and it didn't feel as organic as Bowser's Minions did. It felt more like a grind. Like I was like, I wasn't really enjoying it. I was just playing it to play it. But the Bowser's Inside Story game was phenomenal. Like it was just so creative that through, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but like
I'm
through
not.
These misadventures and, you know, a series of unfortunate events, Luigi and Mario get like inhaled into Bowser's body.
Oh, wow.
Along with half of the Mushroom Kingdom. And so like, in the game, you're actually kind of playing as Bowser most of the time to take on like the bad guy. And like, because you're the only one, like if anyone's going to take over the Mushroom Kingdom, it's you. So those are his motivations.
Wait, are you like, is this like Inner Space where you're like controlling Bowser as a tiny Mario?
Yes. Yes. So as Mario and Luigi, you then like, as like things, he, you know, things kind of infect his system, you go in and you fight them on the inside, or like there'll be these giant monsters that'll crush Bowser. And so you have to go into his adrenaline system and like pump him up and stuff and fight these monsters in there and like get him going. And then if you do it right, he grows to like, you know, Godzilla proportions. And they end up having these like huge kaiju fights between like Bowser and this big monster or these big robots.
It's kind
and
of
there's
awesome.
Like so much creativity and depth in there. And it's so fun. And again, like every time I finish one of these games, I've told you guys, I'm like, all right, I'm going to finish this one and then I'm going to move on to Tears of the Kingdom. I'm going to do
that before.
But it's like, once I finish one, I'm like, well, shit, I want to see what happens next. I want to play the next one.
Yep.
So I finished Bowser's Inside Story today. I sent you guys a screenshot of the end screen, the final card, and was like, then I immediately started. I started Dream Team, which is the next way. It's the one where like Mario goes into Luigi's dreams on this island where they fight like the bad guy that's kind of like, you know, doing whatever he's doing. But
it's a lot of
like,
weird meta stuff in both of those games.
A lot of meta stuff. Yes. Super creative. And
kind of Inception-y.
It's if you're a fan of like RPGs, if you're a fan of like Final Fantasy style gameplay, this falls more in line with that. It's a little bit more real-time combat-y, like where if things attack you, you can actually counterattack. You don't have to just take the damage. You can time their attacks and counter, which is it's great. It adds some fun to it. And yeah, it's just super cute. Charles Martinet does like the voices for Luigi and Mario, but there's no actual, like they don't say actual words. It's very like gibberishy / Italian. So like whenever they talk to each other, they're like,
and
it's like, okay. Yeah, I don't need to know what they're saying because the context is given you by all the other characters. But you know what? I've rambled on about this long enough. that's what my obsession
is
still. That and the videos that we were talking about earlier about the lawyer who talks about, you know, how legit lawyering is in movies and TV shows. I dig this guy's stuff, and I went down a rabbit hole yesterday.
Give that channel a plug. What's the name of it? I'm going to have to look him up.
So the name of the YouTube channel is Legal Eagle.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, the latest video that came out 13 hours ago as of this record was Trump's bombshell federal document indictment. And yeah, he goes on. It's about
like a fun watch.
It's about a 25-30 minute video where he goes through like everything that's been found, the evidence that's been, you know, collected around it, text messages between employees talking about like, hey, these boxes are all over the stage. What do we do with these boxes? And they're like, put it in the bathroom. And it's like, what? And then at one point, like the boxes fall over, the documents fall out, and some idiot took photos of it and was like, hey, the boxes fell over and spilled out. What should I do with this? And here's a photo.
Well, he's going to jail too. Don't worry about it. It'll be him and his buddy, him and his valet sharing a cell. It sounds like. Well, I'm here for the Schadenfreude, so I'm going to have to check out that channel because, I love seeing bad things happen to horrible people. So I'm here for it.
Oh, for sure.
Pass the popcorn.
So what's on your menu? What are you obsessed with?
Yeah, my obsession, I can't say it's of this week. It was of the last couple of weeks. The one I would have chosen had I not been gone for an extra 2 weeks was an event that happened, I think it was that last week of... No, it was that first week of June, and it's Games Done Quick. Here, I've actually got the mug that I'm drinking out of right now. I bought for.
Oh, did you look at that? That mug's cool. I was gonna get the shirt for this year.
Yeah, they always have cool merch, and it's a nice way.
They re-released the Metroid coins too.
They did. Yeah. They had a lot of stuff, a lot of ways to support. If you're not familiar with Games Done Quick, I don't know the history of it. I know they've been around for a while. It started off as, a Twitch channel when it was a community of speedrunners.
Actually, it was like YouTube.
It was YouTube first.
They would host things on YouTube. Yeah. And it was like very, like, it wasn't. Okay, how do I want to put this? So it had a decent attendance, but nothing like what you see now or what you saw pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Where like it'd be like just huge banquet halls from hotels that are like, you know, that they rent out and they do these runs. And they're getting back to that point, but they're not quite at that point right now.
Yeah.
But what gets me is when they first started and those videos were playing on YouTube, it would be like maybe like they would rent out two hotel rooms and there'd be like about five or six people just in the hotel room watching someone run. And there was this one guy who had this really obnoxious laugh and he was... I can't remember his name, but his whole claim to fame here was that he speed ran Echo the Dolphin. But like super, I guess I hear from the community that he's like super friendly, but just a super obnoxious laugh. I don't think he attends anymore.
Well, yeah, he got shamed by people like you for his laugh.
Yeah, well, you might be surprised to find out that some of this community is a little toxic.
What?
And they kind of bully people out.
No.
Yeah, right?
Not gamers.
Dude, you look up, if you ever have the chance, look up on YouTube, like, I can't remember what it was titled, but it's like GDQ or speedrunner argument or something like that.
No.
And it's at a GDQ where like some guy, like, I guess you could have randos sitting on your panel if they're part of like your game's community.
No.
They could be like nominated to sit on your panel and talk while you're playing. Well, apparently the guy playing the game and this dude that was added to his panel did not get along with each other at all. And just like spent the whole time like just like
bickering,
talking shit to each other and like jabbing at each other. Yeah, dude. I'm sorry. This is your obsession. Please continue.
No. Well, you were setting up what it is. And yeah, you have more history with it. I think I learned about it from maybe you and Jay doing the 16-Bit Gladiators podcast. That was our video game themed podcast. But I'm a big fan now of the Games Done Quick channel and also these events that they put on. I think they do them, I don't know if it's every quarter or if it's twice a year.
Twice a year.
But they just did the summer one. Yeah. Where it's a week long, 24/7, people just doing speed runs. And like you said, they used to do them live during the pandemic. They went exclusively online. This was their first year back in person again, but I think they're still going to keep the streaming around because that's how I watch it. And honestly, while we were on vacation, when Jenna was deathly ill in the hotel room, that was the one thing we had to comfort us was that and the view of the Atlantic Ocean out of our balcony, which we couldn't go to. But in addition to that, it was streaming Games Done Quick for that entire week and just some amazing stuff. It's not just speed runs. I mean, they do have that to be sure of games you know and some you don't. But my favorite ones are some of the gimmicks they have now. They have a guy who we follow now who did Breath of the Wild, a speed run of Breath of the Wild blindfolded.
Yeah.
And did it in like an hour and a half.
Is it the same guy that does Ocarina of Time blindfolded too?
Yeah. And aside from just the entertainment value of these, I do love the community behind it because they are, I mean, except for some of the toxicity, but mostly I don't see a lot of that. I see a lot of support. People are people are cheering on. People want to see people succeed, and a really good positive vibe, at least this year. Another one that stuck out was they had a couple of guys who were doing, I believe it was Mega Man 3, Mega Man 6. It was one I was more unfamiliar with.
Uh-huh.
But they were doing it as a co-op, and by that I mean one person controls the buttons,
yes,
and the other guy controls the directional pad.
Yeah.
And they were just synced up, and you'd watch the screen and just be like, oh, this guy's pretty good at Mega Man 6. And then yeah, you'd look over at the camera that's trained on their hands. You're like, oh, shit, those are two different hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, really incredible stuff. So it's over now, but follow and subscribe to Games Done Quick, because it's a really great event. And they raise money for charity. I think this year was... Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the charity was this year, but always a good cause.
I know that for a long time they were supporting Doctors Without Borders.
That's what it was. There you go.
And then they also do cancer charities. I know the right year my mother passed away, the first GDQ that came up after that, it was benefiting a like some kind of cancer organization. And so that was the first year I donated, and I do it every year now. I don't do it for both. But at least one a year. So they do Summer Games Done Quick, and then they do Awesome Games Done Quick, which is, I think, more around the holidays.
January or something, but yeah.
Yeah. What's awesome now, guys, though, is that now that you have Twitch, if you subscribe to the GDQ channel or Speed Gaming channel, like, you can always see those. Like, you can mm-hmm. pull up, like, past videos or just watch. They'll be playing, like, they'll play replays, or they'll just have some of those speedrunners. Just, oh, yeah, they'll host them doing a speedrun randomly, like, just throughout the year, throughout the week or whatever. Like, hey, such and such is going to speedrun Super Mario 3, or, you know, or they're going to do a terrible game like Friday the 13th. You know, just, it'll be on there. And there's nothing you can't find on YouTube as well. Like, if you want to go back and watch, like, you know, GDQ from 12 years ago, 13 years ago, you could still find those as well. But yeah, dude, it's definitely on in our house. My poor wife on the weekends, like, I'll turn it on and, mm-hmm. and have it going. And my wife will wake up and come out to the living room and see it. And I could just kind of feel her become crestfallen that it's on the TV. And I'm like, I'm sorry. They're about to do the Metroid speedrun. I've got to watch the Metroid speedrun.
Can't miss it.
That's funny. Are they going to save the animals? They're going to kill the animals. And I think this year they made a point. They're like, so we kind of determined that if you save the animals, it actually doesn't save you any frames at all. And this year, the guy who saved the animals got like stuck on a pixel a couple times after he saved the animals. I was like, oh,
that's what you get.
That's unfortunate.
That's why good guys finish last.
So let us know what your obsessions are. You can write us at Low Res High Def, or, you know, whatever. You could shoot us a message on social media. We've got our Facebook page. Let us know what your obsessions are. And now we're going to get into the meat of the episode, which is hard to believe. We're 30 minutes in, and now we're like, let's get to the meat. And I think one of the things I've been excited to talk to you about, Joel, mm-hmm. has been cartoons, animation. Yes. I know that's something that you and I are both passionate about. Absolutely. It's something you've got natural, you and your brother, those Burnson boys have natural artistic talent. You guys, I don't know if that's something you guys learned or it's something you just always had.
I don't know where he got it from. He has like an innate talent, and I just wanted to be like him when I was a kid. So like anything he did, I was like, all right, he can draw, I can draw. So I kind of learned from him. I don't know that I'm as naturally talented, but I used to want to be a Disney animator. If you would have asked 12-year-old Joel what his career path was, it was going to be a Disney animator. Alas, that did not come true, but such was my admiration of the art of animation.
Well, and the thing is, like, you still use...
That's a Jesse Jackson sort of rhyme.
Oh, no, it's okay. You I would not do it in a house. So at one point, Joel asked me to be part of a commercial shoot that he was doing, and he storyboarded it out. And the character that he had drawn to be me,
you love this story,
is this like Peter Griffin, frumpy, like overweight guy. I'm like, and the thing is, like, he already knew he wanted me to play that guy. And so
he's
I was like,
archetype.
I was like, what? Is this how you see me? Is this who I am?
No, but I knew you could fill that role because you're a chameleon, Joe. Look, you can be, you're John McClane 1 minute and, you're Scott Conn the next.
Oh my God. I'm not sure that's a compliment. But cartoons, animation, not really animated movies. We're not talking about like Disney features, but I think the focus, what I wanted to talk about was like Saturday morning cartoons or like the cartoons mm-hmm. that when I was a kid getting ready for school, there was always a good like hour and a half of cartoons before you had to leave to go to school. And then when you got home, there was always like a good hour, 2 hours of animation, some TV shows after school that you got to kind of dive into. For me, the morning shows were always like Alvin and the Chipmunks and the Snorks and the Smurfs, like stuff like that. That was the early morning stuff. Then afternoon, after you got home, was G.I. Joe, Transformers, Thundercats. Mm-hmm. Like those were the ones that we got into in the afternoons. And then on the weekends were kind of like the marquee shows. I don't know if that's the way you saw it, but like those were like the heavy hitters. You had like the Disney lineup of like the Gummy Bears. And I think you had said in our text thread that like DuckTales started as a Saturday morning show. I watched Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. There was this. So I was going to send you a video of this. My father used to live in an apartment that had like this huge satellite dish. And that was the TV service that they got. And one of the channels they got was KTLA. And on KTLA on Saturday mornings, they had a thing called the Marvel Action Universe. And so it was always anchored by Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Then you had something like Dino Riders and RoboCop, the cartoon of RoboCop.
Wow.
And that was where they debuted the X-Men pilot, Pride of the X-Men, where Wolverine had an Australian accent.
Right.
Which is beautiful. It's done by the Sunbow Marvel Productions people that did G.I. Joe and Transformers. They did this X-Men pilot, and it's so gorgeous. I remember I would watch that every Saturday. I wanted to just kind of dive into this with you and just kind of find out, like, what were the ones that you loved? What were the ones that, you know, you kind of wish they didn't bog you down with? And you know, what were your guilty pleasures?
Yes. Oh, I definitely have some dishonorable mentions and some deep cuts to go through. But, and just to kind of back up, not necessarily ground rules, but we had to draw the line somewhere, right? Because it was like, hey, let's do Saturday morning cartoons. And then you were like, well, if we're going to do that, we also have to talk about the weekday, you know, the after school cartoons. And I'm like, they're kind of in the same category.
Yeah.
And if you just keep expanding that radius, then you end up with like, you know, like where do we draw the line? Because I don't want to get into like Clone Wars and
right. Well, I mean, and I think let's keep it in a time frame where, like, you know, before we became teenagers, you know, like our preteen years, because we didn't have to worry about like Cartoon Network or Adult Swim,
right?
At that point, so
that was its own era. Yeah, I think a safe cutoff is like 80s, 90s. Like you said, we're a couple of guys in our 40s. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably in the same, being raised by morning cartoons, Saturday morning cartoons. But I also remember a lot of Looney Tunes in the morning, and that's where you'd get, you know, just a steady dose of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. And
well, and they used to do, I don't know if you remember, they did like Looney Tunes like specials. That would be primetime specials. They did like, what was it? Like Bugs Bunny's Fantasy Island. And it's like one of those like anthology kind of, it was like a 2 hour movie, but that's with like commercial breaks and stuff. But it would be like, they would go to Fantasy Island and it was all because they found a magic lamp and it made wishes come true. And so you got like each of the Looney Tunes characters would get like a wish that they'd make and we'd see how it would go awry. And then at the end, it would be like Bugs and Daffy getting rid of the lamp because it didn't work out for them. You know, I remember so many of those, but you know, Looney Tunes was a huge part. And if we're talking about like a podcast on the podcast, like things that influenced us now, what we're into now and the kind of people we are now, even, I would have to say, like it or not, Daffy Duck is a huge, huge influence on me.
Well, those
and
old,
it's probably sad to say.
No, listen, those old Looney Tunes, first of all, the animation was gorgeous. Like it was still, what were those produced, 40s, 50s? And so, you'd never know it from
all that hand-drawn stuff. Was
exactly, which you would think would be a little more crude and rudimentary, but some of the best animation came out of that era. It wasn't until later on when it was getting a little mass-produced and we were having to outsource them to, you know, Korean sweatshops.
When the Hanna-Barbera era really started to pick up.
We're going to talk about Hanna-Barbera here in a second, but and actually that's a good juxtaposition. Think of how great and how funny. And just the pacing, like in addition to the animation, the way the characters look and were drawn and animated, but also the comedic timing,
the sensibility,
just like, And those directors, you know, Chuck Jones especially, their comedic timing was fantastic. And I think that's something that was sorely missing in the, well, specifically the Hanna-Barbera cartoons that yeah. came afterwards.
I think I would still to this day put Duck Amuck up against any cartoon in the modern era, the past era. Like,
so
that
clever.
Is some of the best writing of a cartoon ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Great direction.
Oh, yeah. It's so, like, so meta and creative. Mel Blanc's voice. Yeah. Just the way that worked, how it broke. It's the first cartoon I remember that broke the fourth wall,
mm-hmm.
where Daffy is talking to the animator, who at the end find out is Bugs Bunny, who's just screwing with him. But what a creative idea, and how fun, and what a showcase from Mel Blanc, you know, just kind of going through these different emotions with Daffy Duck. And it's just, again, watching it when I was a kid, it was funny. And watching it now that I'm 45, it's still one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
And that's a testament to those old cartoons that they weren't just written for kids. They were kind of written for families and adults. And and even as adults, you kind of appreciate the humor. It's not lowest common denominator the way you know, some of these Minion movies are. But yeah, if you're not familiar with the Duck Amuck, that's the one where Daffy Duck is basically... there's a big hand with a pencil that's coming in and drawing and erasing things around him and putting him in different scenarios.
Where he's skiing. he's skiing and suddenly like ends up on a Hawaiian beach. Like, and then his body gets erased and he gets like put together again. The animator makes him into like a walking flower.
A flower,
with like a screwball flag on his tail.
Yep.
Oh, really clever. No, it's so and then there's a part where like it gets stuck between frames, like because these used to be shown in movie theaters, and
That's so right.
It gets like stuck between frames, and there's a Daffy on the top and a Daffy on the bottom, and they start arguing with each other, and it's like, who thought this up? Chuck Jones,
so creative.
That guy is brilliant. I've been on and off over probably the past 3 years going through his book Chuck Amuck, and just the story of his career and just the stuff that he put into this industry is amazing. And then, like, I had no idea that he did time on Tom and Jerry as well.
Well, that makes sense.
His Tom and Jerry era was some of the weirdest. but yeah, like this genius.
But you know what? There wasn't nothing wrong with Tom and Jerry before he stepped in either. That's where those are some of my favorite starter cartoons.
Maybe some
as well.
Racism.
Well, I mean, all right. Maybe. Listen, you're dealing with anything with the 40s and 50s. Hell, even, you know, Disney's guilty of this too. Some of this stuff's a little problematic in the light of the woke 20th century or 21st century, whatever we're in now.
They're all bad.
Still great to look at, and still mostly funny and guilt-free.
There was a place called Crystal's Pizza and Spaghetti here in Dallas. It's closed down probably within the past 4 or 5 years. But back when we were working on the web series, we would go and get lunch there. Like after we would shoot, we would just go over there and get lunch because they had a cartoon theater. Like it was a buffet pizza place, and they were never rushing you out of there. But the place was kind of a dive, but they were never rushing you out, and they had a cartoon theater, and the cartoon theater, like somebody obviously just bought like whatever collection of Looney Tunes cartoons were like out on DVD or whatever.
DVD.
And this was back when like the DVDs were still featuring like the old racist Looney Tunes cartoons and stuff.
Yeah. With the blackface explosions.
So we'd go and watch these and we would just be like beside ourselves, like, oh my God, holy crap. This is bad. Like, you know, Bugs Bunny and blackface, like this isn't okay. but there was like something about it. Like we kind of, I don't want to say like we learned from it, but we kind of learned from it. Like we were like, okay, so this is where things went downhill, but this is where you can kind of bring it back. Like you could ignore that part. And it was just, I don't know. It was an interesting, it became an interesting study.
Well, we've grown since then, as have cartoons.
Yeah.
Growing out of that 40s, 50s, 60s era, you know what, let's touch on Hanna-Barbera a little bit because they really kind of, I mean, while we weren't alive when they were first being produced and aired, they were certainly heavy in reruns in our youth.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
I've
seen plenty of episodes of Jetsons and Flintstone and all those horrible Hanna-Barbera cartoons, Yogi Bear, that are, you know, for everything that the Looney Tunes are, which are, you know, beautifully animated, well-constructed, you know, comedically, the comedic timing, you know, is perfection. all of those things is what Hanna-Barbera cartoons generally lack.
Yeah.
Which is why they have to add a laugh track in there.
A laugh track in
there. Even tell kids when you're supposed to find things funny. Because they weren't inherently.
Also, because like Flintstones specifically, at least I know this, it could be true for the Jetsons as well. Mm-hmm. Flintstones was a primetime comedy. Like it was...
Yeah,
it was,
that's true.
It was an early evening, late afternoon comedy that showed on TV. And so I think the laugh track was there because it was on all of those shows at that time.
Right.
So you know, I Love Lucy, you had like a laugh track that was built in. And so, and Flintstones, I'm going to give a little bit of a pass because I think some of the writing on the Flintstones was pretty good. You know, it's a cartoon and it's written with like, cartoon sensibilities. It's one of the two Hanna-Barbera cartoons I can think of that that are still pretty clever, and it was a little more dialogue based that I found clever, but it has some redeeming value to it. The Jetsons, not so much. The Jetsons, I go back to and I'm like, this is rough. This is ugly. But the only other Hanna-Barbera property that I think I give a pass to is Challenge of the GoBots. No, I'm kidding. That's not true. Is Scooby-Doo. The Scooby-Doo cartoons.
You do love your Scooby-Doo.
I love me some Scooby-Doo. And I think that, you know, it's fun. It set a lot of the mystery tropes, a lot of the things that we look at now were kind of established in Scooby-Doo. Like a lot of the stuff that we see in like, you know, slasher films are kind of things that were set up. Those dominoes were set up in Scooby-Doo, and we just kind of saw those things translate into, you know, other mediums. The only time that I think Scooby-Doo gets eye-rolly for me is when we have cheesy like cameos where it's like, it's the Harlem Globetrotters. It's, you know,
right.
The only one that seemed to work was when they teamed up with Batman and Robin. I'm like, okay, that seems to make sense. But like Davy Jones from the Monkees, I don't care about that.
It's so random. And I guess that's a problem when your show is in prime time and you are trying to appeal to, you know, adults and families as well as the children watching them. Those never really landed for me. And if anything, just kind of accentuates the golden age of Saturday morning cartoons and animation that we would come into with the 80s and 90s. Stark contrast to that Hanna-Barbera crap. Jabberjaw.
We lucked out. Ugh. Yeah. Oh, Jabberjaw.
Gorilla. What was his name?
McGilligorilla.
McGilligorilla.
Like,
and they all wore the same fucking tie because they were cheaping out on the animation. Like if your character's wearing a tie, then that's a hard line between the head and the rest of the body, so they can use the same frame. His body doesn't have to move, but his head can move.
You're
all
ruining
at once.
It. You're ruining the magic for everybody.
So awful. Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, because it was so cheap to produce, that made it easy for them to like make the Laugh Olympics, where you put all these characters into the same show and just recycle the animation cells and stuff. And instead of like, you know, Dastardly and Muttley, you put Scooby and Shaggy in a car instead. Like they were, they were seriously like they were doing copy and paste. Like constantly on those cartoons. And I agree with you. You know, I think the first time you were telling me about how much trash Hanna-Barbera was, like back, this is probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and you were talking trash about Hanna-Barbera.
Longstanding
I was
belief.
Getting a little defensive. And then like not long after that, I came across like a Hanna-Barbera hour and started one. I was like, God damn it, he's right.
How far did you make
like,
it into that hour?
I didn't make
did
it
make
very
it
far.
Did you make it the full hour? Of course not.
I didn't make it very
That's
far.
That's ambitious,
man.
For them to put that much shit together in an hour, expect people to sip
like,
through
And every one of them is just a stupid formulaic, like, you know, it's Yogi and Boo Boo. It's the dog and his son. It's, you know, Huckleberry Hound.
Huckleberry Hound.
Quick Draw McGraw. And like everybody had like a weird, stupid, like half of these characters didn't need their own show. There was one called Inch High Private Eye. Like somebody came up with a character named Inch High Private Eye, and his whole gimmick was he was just super short. He was just a little guy.
Well, what about Jabberjaw? He's just like a shark who can talk and
who
walk
talks
on
like
land.
A stooge. It's humans. One stooge. The curly. Yeah. It was curly.
Yeah.
And that was Jabberjaw. Do you know how annoying that? And he ran around with kids. Like all these characters, they ran around with like 4 or 5 kids. And I'm like, these kids run around with a shark out of the water. And then they had Speed Buggy. And it was about a speed buggy.
Oh,
it was
a
dune buggy that talked.
Listen, we don't need to spend any more time on it. There's too many good cartoons to go through. Let's not waste our breath in a listener's time.
What I'm saying is, without the sour, the sweet just ain't as sweet. And so
there
we were inundated with these horrible cartoons, which made 1984, 85 so much more profound. When we had the dawn of like the Sunbow Marvel Productions, they gave us Transformers, G.I. Joe, and then you had Filmation that gave us He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, She-Ra, Brave Star. We got Thundercats out of this, Silverhawks.
Oh.
We got this like weird, and I think it's what made me, it drew me towards anime later in life. We got these beautiful shows, Transformers, like, you know, the complexity of these animations, of these robots. And I know at the same time in Japan, we were getting Voltron, but like Transformers was, correct me if I'm wrong, Transformers, G.I. Joe, that stuff was like American made, but like contracted out to Japanese animators, but it was written for American audiences.
Yes,
right?
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Whereas Voltron was like Japanese audiences and then translated for America.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So we got that stuff. We got around that time, we got Mask. Like to be a young boy and watching these TV shows, which were all like, and I remember people saying like, it's just commercials for toys. Yeah, but they were the best commercials.
I'll take it.
Because there was some great writing, some good stuff going on, you know, like.
It's reductive, I think, to just say that it's like commercials for toys, because you got to make the kids care about them. You got to make the kids want them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the designs can be cool, but honestly, we were so inundated with these cartoons and these great designs that sometimes the designs weren't enough.
Yeah.
And the animation, as great as it was, you wanted to relate to the characters and you wanted to kind of a through line. Transformers, I remember, was like, oh, every episode, it's a progression of this story. And, you know, when you're 8 or 9 or however old we were watching them, probably younger, and kind of being introduced to episodic TV, it's training wheels for kids like us as
absolutely
far as long form storytelling goes.
The first two seasons, I think the first two seasons of G.I. Joe were like, I think, 8 episodes, and they were all miniseries. Like both seasons were a miniseries. Like one was the Weather Dominator, and one was like another one where like where Duke and Snake Eyes get kidnapped. It may be the same one. I know there were two separate stories though, but it was like the first time I remember a cartoon picking up the story. Like the next day picked up the story, and like you needed to be in front of that TV at 3 o'clock after school. You better be there at 3 o'clock so you could see the next part.
Yeah. Mom's watching General Hospital. That's her episodic stories. And we had Transformers and He-Man.
Okay, so if anyone were listening to this and they'd be like, oh, dude, you know, it's just, this is just a special case. You know, you guys are into, you know, to cartoons, but it wasn't that influential. I would point to how that translated over into arcades, and not to get into gaming too much or anything like that, but just to kind of use this as an example of how influential animation was at the time, especially as it began to evolve. Look at Dragon's Lair. Like the appeal of this game, because it looked like the cartoons we were getting into at the time, you know, this beautiful animation. And in fact, they made Hanna-Barbera made a Dragon's Lair cartoon for Saturday mornings.
Oh, I remember that.
And it did not look as good as the video game.
No,
did.
It did. Well, come on. You're coming from Don Bluth, filmmaker Don Bluth, who was a Disney animator who went off and made, you know, American Tale and Secret of Nim and Land Before Time.
And that animated part from Xanadu.
And that animated part from, that's right, exactly. Listen to our Xanadu episode from the editing bay if you want to know what the hell we're talking about. But yeah, there is a relationship, though, I would say, with some of these cartoons we watched and video games. Not only were we seeing video games based on some of the cartoons we were watching, you know, Ninja Turtles, the X-Men cartoon, which I'm sure we'll talk about, Simpsons to a lesser extent, not a Saturday morning cartoon, but still animated nonetheless.
Sure.
But we were also seeing cartoons based on some of the video games we were playing. I remember there being a Pac-Man cartoon, which was really disturbing. Not very good.
Yeah.
But there it was. You had the Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
Uh-huh. There was a Donkey Kong cartoon.
There was a Donkey Kong cartoon. That's right. Yeah.
There was. Do you remember Rubik the Amazing Cube?
I do not, but I do not doubt that they made
that. Dude, everything in the 80s, everything got a cartoon show. Like if it was even kind of popular, it got a cartoon show. Happy Days had a cartoon show.
Yeah, it was weird.
That took place in the future. It's like this TV show about life in the 50s and 60s, and suddenly Fonzie's going to space with Richie Cunningham.
Oh my God.
It's like, what? Punky Brewster had a cartoon.
Oh, I do remember
Mr.
that.
Mr. T had a cartoon.
Like, yeah, he did.
Everything had a cartoon at some point. I think they made a Mork and Mindy one.
Mork and Mindy absolutely had a cartoon.
And I
love when that extended to movies. And we got some Saturday morning cartoons. First of all, I want to do a little 60,000-yard view of just the whole Saturday morning cartoon phenomenon. Because if you're not our age, or at least over the age of 35, sadly, the era of Saturday morning cartoons has kind of gone away. You know, we don't have appointment viewing anymore.
What would you say, about 10 years ago? 10 years ago, they stopped doing it? Or maybe even more than
I feel more
that?
Like 20. I feel like this is squarely an 80s, 90s thing because it was a big deal. When the fall season would come out, you know how TV works, or at least network television back in the 90s and 80s. You got fall season comes around. You get new seasons of your favorite shows, new rollouts of new shows. And the same was true with cartoons. But it was a big to-do. There would be specials that would announce and show clips of the new shows that be coming this fall on Saturday mornings.
God, I remember that. I remember that. I remember one that was like, it was based at like, we followed the character Punky Brewster and she went into like these different places, these different, like this hour long adventure into this world. And like, that's how they introduced her cartoon show. And yeah, dude, I remember all that. And Saturday mornings, so they did Saturday morning cartoons, and I think there was even like a little bit of Sunday morning, like not as much. You had to dig around to find it.
That's Lord's Day, Joe.
Saturday morning, I remember when Jem and the Holograms came on. That was like the begin. That was the last ditch. Like you're grasping. That was the last cartoon before like golf or bowling came on TV.
I know. Like, oh. Wasn't that the saddest? It was like 11:30.
Yeah. So you had to like really just squeeze as much enjoyment as you could out of that last cartoon. It's like it never felt like, at least to me, because I was a boy and a sexist little boy who now I go back and I look at Jem and I'm like, this looked as good as anything else that I liked.
And
it was actually pretty well written. It was just, you know, a bunch of chicks. And it's, I kind of felt like, oh, I wish they would finish stronger. But I remember Jem was the last one. For most of my childhood, Jem the last one. And I'm like, oh no, this is it. Now I'm going to have to get dressed. We're going to go to like the Home Depot or something. Like, I don't want to do that.
I remember there being difficult decisions because, you know, it wasn't just one channel. There's no Cartoon Network back in the day. It was like, these were the major networks. You got your ABC, CBS, and NBC. And then ultimately like Fox and even WB had their own Saturday morning slots. And so you'd have to get that TV guide and figure out. Yeah, I'd work my schedule out. Be like, okay, what's coming on at 8:30? What do I got to see at 9? You know, I got to flip over to Fox at that time, and then got to come back for X-Men.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sophie's Choice.
What I think ours pretty much stayed on
ABC.
I think it was ABC because it was like more of like the Disney. You got some of that. I think the Disney shows, like the better looking shows, were on ABC. And then I think as I got older, as I hit my teens, and we'd throw on the cartoons and it would be like, you know, I think I was cutting over to like, what was it, MTV, where you had Ren and Stimpy.
Oh yeah.
And so I was watching some of that at the time. I know I followed Tiny Toons and Animaniacs religiously those hit TV. And I remember that was when I was a little bit older. I was in my mid-teens when that hit.
Same.
And still like a great time for animation. It looked beautiful.
We had Spielberg behind those too, and they were really kind of pumping up. So you had that Spielberg name and that guarantee of quality, and it was it was a cut above some of the other stuff you were seeing on the other networks. It was Warner Brothers Animation. The animation looked great. They had access to some of these legacy characters, but were creating their own. The humor was witty and irreverent and it's clever and out of left field and stuff you'd never seen before.
You know, I compare like what it is that I watch now and a lot of the stuff that my kids watch. Like there's a show that Sarah will watch with them. I've watched with them too quite a bit. It's called Miraculous. And it's kind of like a CG anime that's produced in France. It's so weird, but it's like, it's really cool. It's this story about like a girl. It's almost like a Peter Parker style character. She goes to school, but she's got these superpowers. There's a bunch of other kids in her school that also secretly have these superpowers and stuff. But like the first three seasons were kind of like Monster of the Week. And it's just this latest season that they just released where it's like becoming more episodic and building on like the storyline. And it's really interesting. And I compare it to like those early seasons of G.I. Joe, those early seasons of Transformers. Mm-hmm. And it's very satisfying to see that there's something like this being created, especially in an age where I kind of feel like all these cartoon shows are screaming at my kids. You know, like my children will sit here at this video game that's behind me. Mm-hmm. They'll play a video game with each other and they're standing right next to each other and they scream at each other. They're like, Harper, I've got to do this. Okay. But
they're excited, like, Joe.
Well, they're excited, but they're also mirroring what's going on some of these other shows they watch. There's a show they watch on the Disney app called Dino Ranch. And every one of these children is constantly screaming at each other, like that, like Dora the Explorer, like are screaming at the kids watching the TV show. And it's like, you don't have to do that to get their attention.
I know.
And I don't remember any shows when we were kids. I don't remember that happening.
I mean,
but then again, we lived in a time where they were making cartoons about R-rated comedies like Police Academy and like RoboCop. They made a cartoon,
yes,
a TV show based on a movie where a guy gets his hand blown off, is killed in like the most horrific way, puts a metal spike in someone's carotid artery, and they're like, you know what? Let's make a cartoon
this
about this
great.
And market it to kids.
How can we get the under 12 audience into the RoboCop world?
There are so many cartoons based on movies that like prominently showed tits in the movie theater.
Yeah, Police
and they're
Academy.
Like, let's make cartoons for kids about this thing. Rambo had a cartoon.
Oh, God. Yeah, I do remember that. That's right.
Yes.
You know, for every one of those, though, there were a lot of, and you're right. We talked about video game adaptations for cartoons, and there were just as many, if not more, movie adaptations. Not all of them were R-rated films, though. A lot of them were, you know, films that as a young teenager you would have been into in the late 80s or early 90s. Ghostbusters had their own cartoon.
Ghostbusters was great.
Which was a really good
one. There were two. Let's not forget. There
was the
real
Ghostbusters,
which was based on like the 1940s film or something.
Right.
And then the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
That was a fun show too, man.
Good show. Took the characters that we knew and loved, kind of expanded them, changed the color palette a little bit on some of them.
Well, yeah,
voices were a little different.
You needed that.
But that
kids liked colors.
Yes, they did, and we got a lot more. So Slammer became like a main character. All of a sudden, he's like a sidekick, whereas he was like a bad guy in the actual movie.
Again, though, a cartoon based on a movie that features a man getting a blowjob from a ghost.
That wasn't the primary conceit of that film. But I understand.
But it
what you're
happens
saying.
In the movie.
I mean, just the idea of ghosts alone, you know, being the, you know, when you break down what they are and what humans think they are, whether you believe in ghosts or not, for them to become fodder for children. And okay, so Ghostbusters, I almost give a pass because that movie was a phenomenon. And of course, they were going to make a Saturday morning cartoon. And it did kind of turn into like a Monster of the Week, right? The ghosts weren't really, you know, undead as we would think of them. They were monsters. However, there was a Beetlejuice cartoon. There was a cartoon based on the movie Beetlejuice, which is about the afterlife and dying, which today kind of seems, you know, a bit of the occult, and I can't believe that there weren't more picketing of that show or more of a to-do about some of the things we were indoctrinating our children with, but there it was.
I don't think, and here's, because it was pre-internet as we know it, I'm sure there were people who were upset about it. We just didn't hear about it.
Didn't hear them. Thank God.
It wasn't newsworthy. No one cared. But now that everyone has a voice and everyone has a group where they can amplify that voice, now we've got people that are like picketing, you know, for any reason, like people that'll picket Starlight Express because they feel like it's an unfair representation of trains. Like it's just the dumbest reasons that people would picket or whatever. Like I've talked to my wife, Sarah. She grew up in like a Baptist household and there were a lot of things that I was exposed to as a kid that, you know, she and her siblings wouldn't necessarily be allowed to watch because, you know, it had magic or there was a cult or, you know, it was something like that. And I'm like, what? It's the Smurfs. Like, what are you talking about? Yes. They're just little blue gnomes that live in mushrooms and there's Gargamel. Yeah, but Gargamel's a sorcerer and that's the occult. I'm like, he's just a crazy old wizard. What are you talking about?
I know. It was so harmless. And but I do think, you know, if myself coming from a fairly religious Catholic upbringing, and yet my mom was a fan of Ghostbusters and Beetlejuice and would let us watch that. And only in adulthood did I look back and examine and think like, wow, I didn't have an issue with that, huh? Uh-huh. No talk of Jesus in Ghostbusters or Beetlejuice and depictions of the afterlife that are not in cahoots with what the Bible is telling us.
No, because it's a cartoon. What are you going to do?
Let me draw the line.
Yeah.
We're better for it, I think.
What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite or do you have like, is it hard for you to narrow down?
Joe, who's your favorite child? You know, it's just like Harper. Me asking you that question. Oh, shit. Got that
part out. She's older. She listens.
She's a little ham.
I'm kidding. I love them both. I love them.
I set you up there.
So like, let's say what your top three, what are your top three?
I mean, I was way into Ninja Turtles back in the day, not just the cartoon, although the cartoon was a big part of it, but obviously the video game and you know, a little bit of the comics, but just the art style. You know, you'd look at any notebook from my elementary or junior high days, and there's a drawing of Donatello or Michelangelo or something. I remember I made my own pair of nunchucks out of some PVC pipe and some chain because I was into Ninja Turtles. I learned it from watching them. So really big fan of that show and that lore. And something I'll continue with my list here in a second, but that's reminded me of a phenomenon of some of these Saturday morning cartoons. You know, we were talking about the Disney ones and how the quality was generally a cut above, you know, certainly the Hanna-Barbera, but even, you know, some of the stuff we were getting out of Japan in G.I. Joe, just some great Disney animation, as you would expect, you know, that's it's Disney for fuck's sake. So they would throw a little more money, at least of the first season, or maybe even like the pilot episode or so.
The full production. No, not even just the pilot, like the full production too, though. Not just the animation, like the Foley, the music.
Oh, yeah.
Like their cartoons had like proper scores and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow.
Absolutely.
No, I hear you.
But, you know, it would, the quality, even in those shows, would kind of drop off in subsequent episodes and seasons. And that's just due to the nature of, you know, they're hiring multiple animation companies generally. Like, if you've got to produce 23 episodes, it's not going to be the same studio that's making them. You're going to divvy that up.
I'm sorry. That's apparent even if you watch the Transformers movie. There are moments where you're like, oh, this looks really good. This and then the it'll switch to another that's like, oh, this is the B team. Like, they did this part.
This is the TV quality version. And here's they save the money shots for the really good guys.
I would direct your attention to, I think it's like about 15 minutes into the movie where there's that first battle where the Decepticons attack the Autobot base.
Right.
And Optimus Prime shows up. And it's like the battle starts and it's beautiful, sweeping. Optimus Prime does his jump. He's like, you know, Megatron must be stopped no matter what the cost. And there's like just this beautiful sequence. And then at some point, halfway through the battle between him and Megatron, it straight up goes into like less detailed, like B-team animation. And you're like,
thicker lines.
It doesn't stay that way, but it's very noticeable where you're like, This was the quick team. Okay. Yes.
And gotcha. The same was true for Saturday morning cartoons. And so generally you'd get the A team that was producing the pilot or the first couple of episodes. And I remember DuckTales just looking like $1 million right out of the gate. And then, you know, as the seasons go along, they're not as great, not as polished.
A little less shading on the characters.
There you go. And the Ninja Turtles cartoon was definitely one of them. If you've ever seen the pilot of the Ninja Turtles cartoon.
Oh, yes.
It's fantastic. It's like anime film quality. And not only in the look and the animation and the style, but the choreography. You know, this is a cartoon about turtles that do ninja moves.
Yes.
And the choreography was, you know, great action sequences and fighting and really well thought out. And then in later seasons of Ninja Turtles, it was a lot of jumping and swinging. Very rudimentary, very dumbed down animation because, you know, we got 50 episodes of this thing to produce.
Had to hurry up and churn those things out, man. You know, Ninja Turtles is another one, though, that's like the fact that it's based on a comic that was lampooning Frank Miller's Dark Knight.
yeah.
You know, which is in itself adult content. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very adult Batman story. And the fact that like Eastman and Laird created the Ninja Turtles to lampoon that. And then suddenly like it just kind of took off and became its own thing. The Ninja Turtles cartoon is just like, it's leaps and bounds different than what Ninja Turtles was in the comics. And the thing is, I didn't know this until, because my first experience with the Ninja Turtles was happening upon it one morning, watching TV, coming across the cartoon and being like, what the fuck is this? Just the title, the name itself. I was like, it blew my mind. I was like, what? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, like it sounded so alien and the title was so long and weird, but like it was so engaging and endearing. These characters were so awesome.
Yeah.
And I remember going into school and telling my friends, I'm like, so I just watched a cartoon called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. Like, what? What are you talking about? Dude, you're so weird. Like, what? That's not a thing. And then eventually, like it caught on like wildfire. It caught on and, you know, became its own phenomenon. And like within like 2-3 years, it felt like within 2-3 years, you had this live action movie about it.
Oh yeah, Turtle Mania burned bright and hot for a good 3 to 4 years, though.
Oh yeah,
and mostly due to this cartoon, because a lot of the things we know about Ninja Turtles, or you know the tropes, they love pizza, they say cowabunga, like stuff like that. That wasn't coming from the comics. That was all out of the cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because in the comics, they were all kind of that Batman character. They were, you know, a very few words and, you know, always grumbling and gruff. And, you know, it is funny to see these personalities that came to life and how, you know, eventually those personalities are what define the characters more than anything else. It's what translated into the films. And then, you know, have you seen the trailer for this new one?
I have now. Yeah.
Mutant Mayhem. I love how everything is becoming into the Spider-Verse. Like every movie is now becoming that.
Art style. Mm-hmm.
And I'll take it. It's beautiful. Yeah. I love it.
Got Seth Rogen behind it.
Oh, yeah. A guy who clearly grew up with it like we did. Mm-hmm. So Ninja Turtles would you say that's your favorite or just one of the top three?
Definitely top three and one of the most influential ones I was watching back in the day. Before I go on with my list, Joe, do you have one? What's one of your favorites?
I mean, G.I. Joe. Easy.
Yep, you do love the G.I. Joe.
I love G.I. Joe. I love what that's all about. I love the characters. I love that it crossed over into the WWF at the time. Like you had Sergeant Slaughter, who is one of the characters. And so I identified with him because I saw him on, you know, in wrestling. And then, oh my God, he's a G.I. Joe character too. I thought that, like, I liked Transformers, but I collected the shit out of some G.I. Joe characters.
Really?
Like I think part of it started because it was G.I. Joe and that's my name, you know, like it was really cool to have something that your name was on and like, okay, cool. His name's Joe. I'm Joe too. And so that's kind of where it started, as shallow as that is. I mean, come on, I was a kid, but yeah, like I thought the toys were super cool. I would always stage battles. One of the best things in the world, crowning Christmases was waking up and my parents had gotten me that aircraft carrier that was so big.
Yes.
I could lay on it. I could nap on it. and I'm so bummed I don't still have it, you know, I have nowhere. I have nowhere to put that thing. But yeah, I would stage fights, and like my buddy Sean and I, after school, we would hang out, and we would for hours. Like, I can't even think of that now. I don't even think my children play with their toys for hours, but we would keep ourselves occupied staging battles and creating our own like stories for hours with these toys.
Well, save your stories of toys based on some of these cartoons, because we will be talking about the toys in a future episode. But yeah. I hear you with G.I. Joe. I realized something as I was putting these lists together thinking back on some of my favorite cartoons. I didn't really gravitate towards the ones that featured humans. You liked He-Man, you liked G.I. Joe. Yeah. I was more into Transformers and Ninja Turtles. And if there were humans involved, I wasn't really there.
You were out.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Lame. I want to see bunnies and, you know, cats.
I think that's, but I mean, I think that's fine. I mean, I dug Thundercats. I love the hell out of Thundercats. Maybe that's still too
humanoid.
Humanoid, that's a little too humanoid still, but
a little bit.
You know, I think Ninja Turtles, that kind of counts. That's just as humanoid as Thundercats.
Fair enough.
I guess, I don't know, but you're right. I do, now that I'm looking back on it, I do gravitate more towards the humanoid characters, because, you know, you pointed out He-Man and the Masters of the Universe is another one that's like in my top three. I love that cartoon, and by extension, She-Ra, I thought was awesome. And that I think was what ultimately pulled me out of, like, I can't be into a show about a girl, because She-Ra was badass and I think they made it okay because they made that movie where like they meet up with each other and you know, it's
crossover.
So it was kind of just an extension of that world and I was all for it, man.
Now I did make an exception with a couple of shows, and the X-Men cartoon being one of them, because man, I was ready for some X-Men. I had discovered the comic maybe a year or so before that cartoon came out, so I knew the characters, I knew kind of the rudimentary story, but didn't really get emotionally attached to that world until that cartoon came out. And something we haven't really talked about yet that can't be understated is the theme song. Like, this was the age of, you had to have a kick-ass theme song. Like, I can just imagine, you know, ABC, we're going to greenlight a new, you know, cartoon. It's going to be our flagship Saturday morning. All right, here's the characters, whatever. But first things first, let's get somebody to write a theme song.
Yeah,
that's
we need
gonna
a
be
theme
an earworm
song.
And get that animated along with it, because, from DuckTales, everybody knows DuckTales. Obviously, Ghostbusters already had a built-in
one. Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
All those Disney ones, DuckTales, which then led to Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, and even like Tailspin, and Darkwing Duck following.
Yes.
They all had little catchy tunes and kick-ass animation. So, yeah, I was a fan of any cartoon that had a great theme song, and X-Men was one of them.
X-Men had a fantastic theme song, and I love the fact that if you've watched the new Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, I don't think I'm spoiling anything at this point. Have you seen that movie?
I have not yet, but I do know. No, I know who makes an appearance.
Okay, so yeah, when you know what, guys, spoiler alert, go ahead and skip about 10, 20 seconds, because I'm about to say it. 3, 2, 1. When they reveal Professor X and they play a little bit of that cartoon theme in the score, you hear da 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 da. And they even did it, I guess, in the Ms. Marvel show on Disney Plus. In the final episode, I guess, when they reveal like she's a mutant, and they say the word, and you hear the part of the score, the da 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 da. And I think that, again, that speaks volumes to like the how powerful and how memorable that theme song is, and how important and ingrained it is. Like, it is just as much of a character as Wolverine or Gambit or Rogue. It's that theme song.
And they brought that show back now in the form of X-Men 97, I believe is what they're. Is that out already yet now?
No, not yet. Disney
not
Plus?
Yet.
It's way. Yeah, it's coming soon.
Yeah, that's
and
exciting.
The entire original voice cast is back for it. I am down. It's one of the few shows that I own the entire run on physical medium. That and He-Man.
So would you say that's one of your favorites, one of your top threes?
It's one of my favorites. However, would probably put Batman the Animated Series right above it.
There you go.
I thought Batman the Animated Series was just so good. It captured the tone. Mm-hmm. It took the best parts of the comics and the best parts of like the Tim Burton movies and kind of combined it all together to make this wonderful atmospheric place and like did justice with all the characters. And look at the voice talent that you're talking about here, you know, and Kevin Conroy, rest in peace, Kevin Conroy, the greatest Batman voice ever. Like just to this day, great Batman voice. Mark Hamill is the Joker. It's where we got the advent of Harley Quinn. It's where Harley Quinn was created. And now she's one of the biggest characters in DC.
I know.
You know, it's so good. And I guess my only regret when it comes to Batman, the animated series is the fact that it like spun off like Superman and the Justice League. And not that it was horrible. Superman wasn't horrible. It's just none of those were as good as Batman, the animated series. And without Batman, we wouldn't have gotten a lot of these strong, straight to video movie releases.
Oh yeah. Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah, Mask of the Phantasm, but not even just Mask of the Phantasm. A lot of the modern DCU animated films are thanks to the work and the success that was created by Batman the Animated Series.
And it was so refreshing at the time, too, from a visual standpoint, because all cartoons were kind of looking the same. You either had the Disney style, you know, with all the DuckTales and those, or you had the movie adaptations where you had Ghostbusters and Beetlejuice and Back to the Future. Remember the Back to the Future TV show?
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures.
The Mask was another one too.
Oh, Mask, yeah.
But they all kind of had a similar style. Great animation. But what Batman was doing and taking a cue, like you said, from the Tim Burton movies and working with like contrast and monochromatic frames. And I just remember that opening sequence that was so minimalistic, but the animation was so smooth and atmospheric. And even the design of Batman, where he just had the little slits for eyes, and it was a simplified design.
And kind of its adjusted Danny Elfman score that they would use. Mm-hmm. Dude, there's so much good stuff going on in that show. That show was so strong. And I felt like the animation style, I want to go out on a limb and say that it was always strong. Like it always felt like it was consistent. Whereas when we talked about Transformers, like it felt like there was clearly like an A team and a B team. With this show, more often than not, it just felt like it was the one team that was rocking it.
And also that show kind of led to Gargoyles. You remember Gargoyles?
Cartoon?
Which I believe was Disney, but it was kind of their answer to Batman tonally, I felt. But it was a little more adult. The storytelling was a little more adult. There were like guns and murders and some dark, scary shit.
Well, dude, Disney's answer to that wasn't just Gargoyles. That was how we got Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, Darkwing Duck was still like
They were trying to do a thing based. Yeah, no. But that's what I'm saying. Like they were taking what Batman the Animated Series started, and they were trying to then like market that to a younger audience.
Yeah, Disneyfy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a trendsetter. It was Batman the Animated Series was Nirvana of cartoons.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
It ushered in a whole new era.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. I do have to put Transformers probably at the top of my list just because of how influential that was from the design and the animation. Like I was a huge animation fan and Transformers was partly responsible for that because I was just in awe of how detailed, you know. Uh-huh. And I mean, you go back and look now, and at least, especially some of the later seasons when they would transform, it would really just be like, you know, Starscream standing up and then he lays down and now he's flying. And not so much transformation, but some of the, like I remember, you know, recording them on VHS and watching them kind of doing that frame by frame feature to see like, oh, the arms tuck in here and the head folds down into the chest and just so cool. And then of course, you know, when the movie came around, it just took it up a notch. But,
so I will say that of the cartoons that got their own film treatment, mm-hmm. Transformers, I think, is my favorite
of
the animated films.
Yeah.
I think, you know, above the Masters of the Universe, Secret of the Sword, G.I. Joe the movie, there was the Smurfs and the Magic Flute had a theatrical release.
Oh, yeah.
But Transformers, the movie, was like a whole lot. And we've talked about this before on the old podcast, where it wasn't just visually and just seeing things that you never thought, like you saw the death of Optimus Prime.
How ballsy.
You saw Ultra Magnus get like blown away, you know, Megatron and you were introduced to Unicron and not just that, but like the soundtrack. Like, this was, as a kid, it felt like you were watching a big boy movie, though.
Yeah,
like,
it did. It was all great.
Wow. Like, and even now, I still get that rush when I hear the soundtrack. I get that rush when I see it. So, I watched a pirated version of Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
The new one, yeah.
And there's a lot of throwback to the animated movie.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that got me, it got me right in my, like, my 8-year-old heart, mm-hmm. where I was just like, what? I will say, not as good as Bumblebee.
I've heard that.
But better than the other ones. Like, I've heard that. I don't know. A lot of people are like, it's the best since the first Transformers. And I'm like, I mean, the first Transformers was fun.
Not that great.
But it wasn't even really that great of a movie. No. Like, I would say Bumblebee, then this one.
Well, yeah, because the rest have the stink of Michael Bay on them, and they're not Transformers movies. They're Michael Bay movies.
They're Michael Bay movies.
That have been confirmed.
But yeah, dude, like, you know, I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying, like, they kept the design for Unicron is exactly what it was in the cartoon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I do want to see it just for that. And for RC, she was one of my favorites as well.
RC's cool. Yeah, it's a cool role. It's a fun movie. I recommend it. But yeah, like, just getting back to what I loved about the animated movie, clearly the person who made this new film also has a reverence and a love for that original Transformers film.
Yeah.
What's a guilty pleasure that you'd like that doesn't necessarily come up in conversation, but it's something that when you think about it, you always think about it fondly, and there's really not a bad word you could say about it.
You know, I grew up on Garfield. I grew up reading the Garfield books, the comic strip. I would buy the books that had the collection, and I was a fan of the cartoons, too. It started off with specials, right? He would have a Garfield special every now and then, but then ultimately turned into a Saturday morning cartoon in the form of Garfield and Friends. And I don't know.
So
he always
trying to mail Nermal to Abu Dhabi.
That's right. I don't know. It's simple. It's like a warm blanket. Garfield is. You know. It's not too complicated, but you know what you're gonna get.
Okay.
I love Garfield.
Mine was Denver the Last Dinosaur.
With the glasses.
I enjoyed the shit out of Denver for some reason.
So
I love me some Denver the Last Dinosaur.
I remember that.
This dino and like. And it's so funny because, like, I didn't need much of an explanation. Mm-hmm. Like, the explanation was these kids found an old dinosaur egg, it hatched, and they became best friends with this guitar-playing, Hawaiian shirt-wearing dinosaur.
Went to high school with him,
and
right?
It's like, yeah, he went to high school. And, like, I think there was even, like, this whole, like, B-plot where the teachers are like, there's something weird about that kid.
Can't like, quite put our finger on it.
But I loved the theme song. I loved there's just the stories. It was like, it was empty calories, but it was very just delightful. And I don't have a bad thing I could say about Denver the Last Dinosaur.
I do have some other guilty pleasures. I have a triumvirate of bear shows that I appreciated in the form of Gummy Bears, Care Bears, and the Winnie the Pooh show. I was a fan of all three.
The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
That's right.
Ooh, yeah.
Gummy bears bouncing here and there and everywhere.
You know, I just had a conversation with my daughter today. I took her to the store because she was talking about a girl that's in her summer classes. She's like, she's got this friend and she's got her own pencil box and she's even got her own mini stapler and she really wants a mini stapler. So we stopped by the store on the way home and I got her a mini stapler that she could put in her pencil box.
Cute.
And ended up getting myself a package of gummy bears. And I was sharing them with her as we were driving home. Mm-hmm. And she's like, that's so funny that gummy bears, because I was singing the song. She's like, it's so funny that gummy bears are a candy and a song. And I'm like, well, baby, gummy bears was a TV
show. Prepare to have your mind blown.
Yes. She's like, it was? I'm like, baby, you've watched it. Like, you've definitely watched the show before.
Yeah.
I have. I'm like, yeah, when Disney Plus came out, that was one of the first things we watched. And so she doesn't remember it. We're going to have to go back to it. But
yeah,
Gummy Bears was fun. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought up Care Bears because, like, Care Bears had like a couple theatrical releases. Like, they did a couple of movies.
I saw them both in theaters.
Yeah. And not bad. You know, like, they still kind of stand up.
Yeah,
I was a little out when they started introducing the Care Bear cousins, where it's like, okay,
they're
either bears or they're not. You can't call them Care Bear cousins. Like, there's a lion now and a lizard.
I remember that.
Let's just keep them. Let's simplistic. Yeah. Let's keep them as bears. Mm-hmm. I always like the grumpy one.
Grumpy Bear is good.
Yeah.
I like the rainbow one. The Pride Bear or whatever
his name Pride Bear?
It's probably not what his name was. But,
I thought they just combined made a rainbow. There's one that's just the rainbow himself.
Oh, you know, actually, you know what? You might be right. I can't remember. I'm getting them confused with Lucky Charms now.
Well, that's an easy thing to do.
I like the purple horseshoe bear.
There is a green horseshoe bear. There is a horseshoe bear.
No, it's Lucky. He's got a clover. Lucky
yeah.
Bear.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh my gosh.
Just like Lucky Charms.
The fact that it's like you had cartoons that sold toys, mm-hmm. but then you had toys that ended up becoming cartoons, mm-hmm. like Care Bears, like Cabbage Patch Kids. They had their own cartoons for
right.
a little while.
Yeah. And then you had cartoons selling cereal.
Yeah. That's true. Cartoons selling cereal. That some of them I'm like, you know what? You probably could have made a successful TV show. You probably would have had a season or two of Lucky the Leprechaun.
Dude, I would have watched a Frankenberry and Boo Berry and Count Chocula.
Oh, for sure.
A show based on them.
Yeah.
Was there a show based on them?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so. So
all right, we're losing the story.
No. But so Winnie the Pooh, obviously, I've got love for Winnie the Pooh. That's one that the kids are into. It's so funny. Like the ones that you named off, I'm like, okay, so half of those my children are watching and enjoying.
That's so great. Guilty pleasures for you?
For me, other than Denver the Last Dinosaur, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like there really isn't a whole lot that I feel guilty about getting into. I liked the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon.
Yes.
Which, you know, you go back and talk about people picketing and like the occult and how could they get away. Like that's one that nowadays I'm like, oof. I'm not sure you'd get away with that, but yeah, I like the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon. I dug on Mask, even though it was it was like someone saw Transformers and G.I. Joe and they're like, let's just put them together.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was. Awesome.
And I like that one. Okay. I think I either really liked cartoons. I think Denver, the Last Dinosaur, like I said, is the one that like, I really don't talk about. But if it was on, I didn't turn it off. Like I stayed for the whole thing. There were cartoons though that I couldn't stand, and I didn't understand the appeal to them. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get behind it. One of them, which you're probably going to disagree with me on, mm-hmm. but Captain Planet, I just couldn't get into Captain Planet.
No, I mean that was clearly a mandated cartoon, like that had to have a message. And even as children, I think we were kind of both picking up on this seems a little preachy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for the planet and everything, but this guy's not cool. He's not cool.
He's got a mullet, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly. He's wearing tights.
I was just kind of over it. Like, I was like, why not make one about a cool superhero?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think there was a part of me that's like, it's a little too much responsibility to put in the hand of children. Like when they're going to call an earth deity
yes,
to come to life to save them. That's a lot of responsibility to put on children.
Yeah.
We should probably get an adult in here somewhere.
Yeah. How about some of the foreign shows? And I mean like British, like Danger Mouse. You ever watched Danger Mouse?
Count Duckula
was another one. Yeah.
Yeah. Danger Mouse. I dug.
Me too.
I thought it had a nice catchy theme song. Mm. My mother had this weird, love hate relationship with Nickelodeon, and that's
same.
Where Danger Mouse had premiered. And like, you know, I think it was because you can't do that on television. And my mother felt like the content in that show was a little, too much for my sense.
She didn't think you should be able to do that on television.
Yeah, she didn't think they should be doing
that
on television. And so she was kind of out on Nickelodeon, but then Nickelodeon also had like Pinwheel, and they had a show called Today's Special that was basically Mannequin, but as a TV show.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Inspector Gadget.
The Inspector Gadget wasn't Nickelodeon, was it?
Was it not? I think it was.
No, I don't think so.
I only think so because I did not have Nickelodeon, and so I was envious of the neighbors in my block who did.
Uh-huh. So what Nickelodeon was, it was like BBC, but it was Canadian television. Like
yes.
It started off as a Canadian network, and so that's why like all of the actors were Canadian, and the TV shows were British. Like Danger Mouse was a British cartoon, mm-hmm. but it was by way of Canada. And so that's Inspector Gadget, I'm pretty sure was a Deke show.
Yeah.
pretty.
Which I know, right? At the end, there was always like some little
cute
kid
little
sleeping in a bed, and then like we look outside the window and it's Dick. Dick.
It's weird. How can you do that on television? You can't do that on television.
You should not do that on television. It is irresponsible. It's morally irresponsible to attempt that on the TV.
I will say, you know, we talked about Tiny Toons a little bit, but I don't think we touched on Animaniacs or the follow-up. I don't know if you call it a follow-up, but kind of in the same vein, Freakazoid. Freakazoid. Kind of a deep cut.
Yeah. Those were all strong.
They
man.
Were. And just how, and again, that was the kind of the beginning of cartoons that were made for adults. And I'm not saying like they were adult themed, but the humor was certainly at a level above, you know, your Ninja Turtles or your Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And the animation was great too.
It's that, well, it's the animation, especially with Animaniacs. Not only was the animation great, but we're getting back to like where the writing, the sensibilities was really like it trusted at least preteens and teens to kind of be a little more socially aware because there was a lot of topical humor in there. You know, you had Bill Clinton playing the saxophone in the theme song. And it's like, you know, at what time, other than when we were kids, were children really that like present about like what the politicians of our time were doing?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, Bill Clinton plays the sax. Baloney in our slacks. What is this? This is kind of dirty.
They're Animaniacs. Oh, man. Another great theme song, and also some great music-themed episodes or little vignettes where they would teach you like the countries of the world or the states and put to music.
To music. They knew the best way to learn was to just put it to music, man.
Yeah.
You know what? Inspector Gadget did start off on Nickelodeon.
Aha, I knew it.
It did start off on Nickelodeon.
Vindicated. I am so
good for you, man.
Thank you.
Okay, so do you have anything else when it comes to these cartoons? Because I feel like did we touch on what you didn't like?
What I didn't like, I didn't really have a lot that I didn't like. I mean, I was always more perturbed by if the animation wasn't up to par, like I wasn't there for it. It really had to have and there was such a such a deluge of quality shows at that time coming out where it's like you really had the pick of the litter.
So you don't like GoBots because of the toys or because
Go-Bots
of the cartoon?
Yes.
Yes. Because I'm gonna defend the toys were actually kind of neat. They were kind of
neat. They weren't
as complex as Transformers.
Oh, look, it's standing up. He's a robot. Oh, if you lay him down, he's a car.
He's a car.
There's no transforming going on.
Psykill was, he would transform. Yeah, you had to turn his head.
Listen, I smelled the ripoff on the GoBots from a mile away.
One of my favorite things. See, I'm not going to defend. I didn't like GoBots so much that I'm going to defend it, but I didn't mind
GoBots.
Name
me one GoBot character.
What?
Well, actually,
Psykill?
I guess. There you go. Okay. Name me two.
Oh, God. Well, now you've got me.
There you go.
So one of the, I loved in the Bumblebee movie where, what's his name? Justice Smith is coming out of his house to see what's going on with Haley Steinfeld. Yeah. And he's got a GoBots comic book in his hand.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. Nice.
All right. So if you have any thoughts about cartoons you enjoyed growing up, cartoons you didn't like, cartoons that we've glossed over, because I know we've mentioned, at least named, like majority of them, but I'm sure there's stuff that we've missed. I mean, God, we talked about the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. We didn't even mention The Legend of Zelda. We didn't mention Captain N, the Game Master.
Oh, that's right.
Like, so when video games hit, when Nintendo came back, brought the video game era back, like there were so many cartoons that followed suit. But if you've got any thoughts, you could hit us on social media at Low Res High Def. Every time I do that, I want to say the editing bay at Low Res High Def, or you can find us online, lowreshighdef.com. And you know what? Share with us. Let us know what it is that you enjoyed, what you didn't like, and what you think doesn't get enough love. Do you have any ideas what you'd like to talk about next week?
I do, actually. But before I jump into that, two more honorable mentions that I totally forgot about. How about Reboot? You remember Reboot?
Oh, yeah.
One of the first 3D computer animated cartoons. A really great idea. It was kind of Wreck-It Ralph the prequel.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, what if your computer was sentient, you know, these little programs in there, and every time you played a game, there was, you know, the heroes, which you thought were the bad guys, were actually inside the computer, and they had to battle you for their own existence. So Reboot's a great show.
And a lot of great references. Like, in one episode, they referenced the Dire Straits Money for Nothing video that's animated kind of like it. It starts off with those characters from the video, and then, like, the Reboot characters interact with them, and they're like, hey, guys, what are you doing?
I remember there was a what was that show back in the day with the smoking man and Scully and
X-Files.
There was an X-Files ripoff episode where they were
and an Evil Dead episode.
Was there?
Yeah, there's a straight up character that's based on Ash, and they end up like in this like horror kind of landscape, and they've got to like help this guy out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this. No, I'm glad you brought that up because that's one that I don't think of often, but when I do think of it, I think of it fondly.
And then lastly, since I talked about computer animated shows, you know, we talked about Transformers, but how about Beast Wars? How about
the follow-up to that?
Just a really elevated thing. Not only was it a technological leap, but from a storytelling standpoint, too.
Yeah, it built on the lore of Transformers and, you know, timely because, you know, this new Transformers movie, we get to see the Primal, you know, Optimus Primal, the Maximals, and the I can't remember what the other ones...
I can't remember.
Beast Wars was awesome. And I remember being very resistant to it at first because I was like, ugh,
same.
It's trying to be like Transformers. And then I finally, it wasn't until I moved into my first apartment and like one of the four channels we had showed Beast Wars like every morning. And so I started watching it and really dug it. It was super cool. Rat Trap was my guy. And he was, I don't know if he was the bumblebee of the show, but he was kind of like...
They wanted him to be.
Yeah. But yeah, dude, that's a good one.
So so I had to get those last ones out there. And there are many more cartoons we can talk about, but I think we kind of drew the line at 80s, 90s, Saturday morning. So there will be another episode. Maybe in the future we'll have some guests because I do want to talk about like kind of the adult era, you know, where we were getting cartoons that were a little more made for us that were in our 20s at that time, or at least late teens, had a little more edge to them.
Yeah.
And there's a whole other genre of cartoons we can talk about. So we'll do that on a future episode, but that is not next week's episode. Next week, I alluded to it earlier. Without all of these cartoons, we wouldn't have a shit ton of toys made off of these cartoons that we were consuming back in the day. And so I think next week we're gonna pivot right to that. We're gonna talk about the toys that made us. I don't think we can say that because that's a show, but
toys that we were consuming back in the day and for some reason seem to have been on the shelves still, like all these years later.
Yeah.
Like I walk in the store and there's Transformers on the shelf, there's G.I. Joe on the shelf,
Ninja Turtles still.
There's Masters of the Universe. Now that Netflix has just done their Revelation show, we got a whole new line of Masters of the Universe. Mondo is constantly re-releasing these like $300 versions of these figures that are like, what? Mm. Wow. Like you guys are just cashing in on our nostalgia like crazy. But yeah, that was a golden age of animation and a golden age of toys, man.
For next week, we're going to be talking about some of the toys from our childhood, how they are made with a special guest, my boss.
Who doesn't have a name?
His name is Jason Geyer. I'll plug him all next week, but you can find him at Toy Otter on Instagram or toyotter.com. Fascinating guy. Makes his own 3D prints his own toys that were like never made. Like he'll go and do characters from, you know, the Batman animated series that they never made toys of. He'll design them in 3D space and print out his own models and paint them. He's a master painter, man.
But until then, man, we will catch you guys next week talking about the toys that created our obsession. Is that good enough? Did I get around?
I think we're legally okay there.
All right. So we're coming in on 2 hours, so we're going to go ahead and sign off on this thing. Thank you so much, guys, and we will catch you next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.